The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 967. It's the 15th of January, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion. That's VRS. And Neil discusses the details of their letter of intent to establish a graphene manufacturing center in China. It's quite big news there. Also on the podcast, Jonathan Forster, CEO of Kora Gold, that's C-O-R-A, talks about the completion of its stage one drilling at their Sannankora gold discovery, and also about exciting new targets identified. Plus, Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talks about the following stocks: Frontera Resources, Rockhopper, Premier Oil, President Energy, and Zenith Energy. Plus, I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is a regular to the show. He's becoming a regular. It's Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion. That's VRS. Neil, thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Justin. Not quite sure what time zone we're in, which country we're in, or even what planet at the moment, but happy to be with you this morning.
You were tweeting sort of pictures last week. You were visiting China, and it becomes evident why you were there. Of course, because a massive RNS release today. Before we do that, any of that, I mean, I always do this, and you are getting quite well known now amongst private investors, but there's always people dipping into the podcast, new investors. Give them a brief summary as to what Versarion's all about, please, Neil.
So Versarion is an advanced materials company. We're commercializing graphene, and the big thing for us now is that we're looking at international expansion. Just last month, we announced that we'd started an office in the US, and this RNS obviously points towards our involvement in Graphene Valley in China.
Yeah, this is when first RNS came in there, I thought, right, okay, and I thought, wow, planned Chinese graphene manufacturing facility. Now we know China is the powerhouse of the world, you know, and some people are saying by 2020 we'll be the biggest economy in the world, some people are saying it's biggest now by spending power, and so you are in the heart here of cutting-edge technology. So you've a letter of intent to establish, first of all, a manufacturing centre in China. Now, there seems to be two phases to this. The first one is to get this manufacturing centre up, which is a 1,000-square-foot facility. And then this goes on. Phase two looks like it's going to be a sort of industrial park based around this kind of graphene. So this is phenomenal. So first and foremost, who are you doing this with, Neil? What is the significance to you? What does it mean to you? You know, take it away, fella.
Well, this is, I don't think even when you've read the RNS that it fully sinks in, to be honest. And obviously, sometimes as a CEO, we know what's going on, and the market could be anywhere up to 6 months behind what's happening. But this particular RNS is literally fresh off the paper. We were only working on it last week. We were invited out to China as guests of the Chinese government and of the Shandong province, which is a real powerhouse. You know, they want to make a name for themselves within China. And interestingly enough, it contains an awful lot of graphite resources. And they've got a fairly ambitious vision that they want to create the Graphene Valley to mirror the Silicon Valley. And little old Versarion is right in the middle of it all. Yeah. And, the consequences of us doing this are massive. You know, I was talking to a government official who reckons that the Chinese graphene market could be worth $200 billion within 5 years, and we're going to be right in the middle of it, backed by the Chinese government and as a partner. So it doesn't really get any better, to be honest.
No, but you know what? So they've obviously done their due diligence on graphene and believe, like you said, right, most people have been talking about for a long time that it is going to be a game changer in so many sectors, so many fields, and they've decided, right, like the Chinese often do, they go into it massively when they believe in something like this. And you're the company at the center of this, you know, cataclysmic movement in their investment here. So it's very exciting, isn't it? And you know, what's good for you is that, you know, when I first read this, I thought that's going to cost a lot. And then obviously the funding is not by you, so it's by them. So essentially, it'll be your intellectual property And you say here, on a licensed basis. So that the deals you've announced, collaborations you've announced so far previously with big companies around the world there, will work be going on in this facility under those collaborations?
So it in no way alters anything that the company is doing. Mm-hmm. We need to establish manufacturing bases close to our customers, because graphene doesn't travel. It's a very light material. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a ton of material is 38,000 oil drums. So, you know, you can't think about transporting this kind of material. It needs to be produced very close to where it's being used. And we've always had our eye on having a Chinese facility. The problem is, if we tried to do it, it would take us time. It would cost us money, it would be a huge risk, and this isn't a huge risk. We're a joint partner in this. We've got the substantial part of this deal, we believe. It's still got to be negotiated. It's still at an early stage, but the pace that these guys are running at is unbelievable. Everybody knows that we need vast amounts of graphene very, very quickly to satisfy the demand that's likely to come. And as a result of that, the Chinese have gone, right, let's just do this. And the company now is under huge amounts of pressure to get this deal finalized. It's under huge amounts of pressure to get operational. And what we're anticipating is that we could be operational the middle part of this year in a facility in China supplying the Chinese market.
The middle part of this year? This year?
Yes, this year, yeah. My guys aren't very happy about this, and the possibilities for holidays are have just been withdrawn. We're under pressure.
Well, China is a good place to go on holidays, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a working holiday, guys. What's wrong with you? But you know what? That is phenomenal speed. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, countries and governments, I think China has come in for attacks saying, oh, they often do their own thing and they're unwieldy and they're slow moving. But that is a phenomenal pace. Because, again, when I read this, I did think it'll be a couple of years, maybe an end of next year.
You need to look at how this whole played out. So 2015, I was at the University of Manchester, where we received the president of China, who made a huge commitment to say that he wanted to collaborate with the UK in this particular field, as well as other fields, but particularly graphene. And now we met the guys from Jinan in November. They've had a requirement that they've not been able to fulfil. They want to get into graphene in a big way. They want to look for a player who has all of the due diligence done, someone who has a huge amount of credibility and reliability, and all the verification is all done. And here we pop up. We enter into a presentation in the University of Bath in November. That led to a dinner 2 days later, which led to an official invitation to come out to China, which led to the letter of intent. And if you take Christmas out of that, you're probably looking at about 4 or 5 weeks from start to finish.
Oh, that's phenomenal, isn't it? And like I said, I assume, so a lot, like you said, it's got to be close to where the orders are and customers are. So a lot of your customers, you know, will be in China, and I suppose a massive amount. And do you know what this says to me? I mean, when people say that they have ambitions of China to be the biggest economy in the world, and it seems like right now they are going for it. It's like, you know, wherever they see cutting edge technology, they are embracing it. And they're not just doing it via a back door, trying to copy it. Like I said, they're using you and your brains and your IP, and they're leveraging you know?
One of the questions is always around IP and do we trust the Chinese, and, you know, are they just going to steal our ideas? We've worked very carefully and closely to ensure that we've chosen the right partners. And there was a tweet went out the other day when I was at an official dinner on Friday for the party secretary, and he is two down from the president and his scientific advisor, and he's given me a categorical promise that all of our IP is protected, and we've got several internal mechanisms to ensure that in no way can this ever be that situation. So not only have we got patent protection, we've got company know-how, we've got the supply of the machines, we've got the supply of the chemicals, we've got the irrevocable promises from key government officials. Everybody wants to make this work. And what we've said to them is, graphene is great, but don't forget there's a whole load of other stuff, you know. So it would be my intention to have a research center in the UK, locally to where I live, creating the next generation of materials. And if in any way we don't like what we see, or you know, we're not happy, then they just won't get access to the next generation of materials. And so, you know, the company has to work really, really hard to ensure that there's a pipeline of new developments that always keeps everybody's interest. The other thing to say is that this isn't, you know, as we said in the press release, we're establishing a Hong Kong base. The idea of that Hong Kong base is that it will license the IP under similar deals to multiple locations. And that's what the meetings are about today and tomorrow. So once we've actually, you know, we've proven this business model, once we've actually got the deal on the table, then there's not really anybody who's not going to be interested in replicating that deal.
Yeah, do you know what? There's a lot of different kinds of investors out there. And some people are traditional investors. They look at, you know, profit and revenue and all that. And they base that on a traditional metric, you know, evaluate a company. But I've said a couple of times on the podcast, if you use traditional valuation metrics to look for companies, you will never make massive, you know, gains. And your company is a particularly excellent example of that. Right now, you are 129 million market cap. But the potential of this deal, who knows what it could be? I mean, have you any figures in mind? Because it seems to me it's truly groundbreaking. But yet, if you were an investor on traditional metrics, you know, Sarian wouldn't have even come up on their filter. You know, which is missing on a massive rise here. So, do you have any idea how much this is worth to you?
I have no idea, and I think it's almost impossible to quantify at this stage. This is a massive deal. It's not only a massive deal for Vesarian, and you know, I'm still the largest shareholder. It's a massive deal for me as the CEO. It's the biggest deal I've ever done, and I know that I've got in trouble with my shareholders for saying that this is a milestone event and it's unprecedented, but unfortunately it is, and I'll take the flak for that, because every week that goes by there's something new that just completely surprises me. But it is also a massive deal for the UK nation. Okay, you cannot underestimate that the UK government has invested heavily in these technologies through the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge, etc. And now Vesarian was very lucky to have picked up the deals that it did and to get the opportunities that it has. But it's now taken that technology and it's exported it successfully. And that is a huge story. High quality, highly skilled jobs in the UK, local manufacturer, outside of the UK where it's appropriate.
Yeah, well, and you know, before this, you were, you know, doing deals with global companies around the world, and now in China as well. I mean, you are, without doubt, and I think this seals it, that you are the go-to company as far as creating, you know, graphene nanning, your brand of it, is concerned. So I think it'll get even busier for you, Neil, won't it?
I think we're in for a really, really interesting, these big deals that we've done. The one thing that always stands in the way is, how are you going to grow quickly? How are you going to be able to satisfy some of the huge demand for these products? And we've been able to satisfy that, at least in China at the moment, through this deal. There is no shortage of investment money. There's no shortage of factories available for us to deploy immediately into, to be able to supply the domestic market within China, which is where a lot of these products are now manufactured.
Excellent stuff. Well, like I said, you're fast becoming a regular, and that's because you're releasing, you know, collaboration after collaboration, so almost on a weekly basis. So, Neil, listen, before we go and chat next week, probably next Monday, something, for anyone listening that right here, and they're not still following you, and we've been talking about you for a while now, since you were sort of almost, I mean, 14 pence, I think, and just below that at one point. But I know you're sort of, what, 88 pence now, I say, or 85. But I mean, if anyone's listening and they're still not following you, and they need three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, give them three quick reminders, if you could. Yeah.
Okay, so we're leading the next industrial revolution through the commercialization of graphene with our partners, the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge. We have a unique position in the collaborations and the contacts that we have to be able to do this. The second biggest reason is that we've now successfully proven that we're well on our way for international expansion. So that's multiple locations delivering the same products. And the third thing is that the graphene, as great as it is only the first of almost 2,000 materials that could potentially be altered using this process. And so multiple locations, multiple products, and also multiple sectors.
Excellent stuff, Neil. Hopefully speak next week, fella.
All right, I'll talk to you soon, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Jonathan Forster, CEO of Cora Gold. Ticker there is C-O-R-A. Jonathan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be talking to you again.
Yeah, and you've been busy straight off the bat there. Start of the year, you've got a significant RNS out. We'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, if you're listening right now and you're new to the market, who don't know much about you, can you summarise what is Cora Gold all about, please, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. Cora Gold, we're a gold exploration company focused in Mali in West Africa, run by a management team that's had extensive experience both in West Africa and in making discoveries. And we're very active on our principal project that we call Sanankoro, which has a very large footprint, at least 15 kilometers of strike length of potential mineralization. And we are currently starting to drill that and turn that the image into reality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, well, you've just announced you've sort of completed stage one drilling at Sanankoro, and you've also got an exciting new target identified. So, first of all, what was the company's objective for drilling, you know, target one at Sanankoro, John?
Yeah, as we've discussed before, at Sanankoro, historic drilling by company Goldfields in the past, they left behind a lot of exploration data and also very shallow RAB exploration drilling, which suggests that across the permit, over a distance of 15 kilometers, there are at least two structures that carry gold. Now, what we're trying to do now is to step out away from the two zones that were previously explored and demonstrated to be to have good continuity of gold mineralization. We want to step away from that and really start to demonstrate that this the gold potential really exists along the entire structure. So target one is the first 3,000 meters of strike length that we're targeting.
Yeah. Okay, well, and, you know, would you say that was a successful drilling campaign, John?
Certainly. First of all, I was very pleased operationally because as a company, we started obviously in October, hit the ground running. First month of drilling in December, we hit our target of about 3,000 meters. And importantly, we're targeting an area of about 3 kilometers of strike length, so a large area, pretty much still on a reconnaissance exploration basis. So drilling on fences about 320 meters apart, but down to depths of 100 meters. Mm-hmm. And that drilling, although we're still awaiting the actual assay results, we, from what we've seen in terms of the quartz veining and in places visible gold where we've panned it, it does suggest that we're seeing a structure continuing through all of that those drill fences.
Okay, well, let's get on to the new target, which is, and excuse my pronunciation here, Tekela Dogo. Can you give us an overview of why you're excited about this new target?
Yeah, sure. Tekela Dogo, it's about 60 kilometers south of Sanankoro on a separate permit, but it is, importantly, within 8 kilometers of the new Yamfulila mine of Hummingbird, who is our one of our major shareholders. Mm-hmm. So Tekela Dogo, our geologists have been on the ground, and we've identified there are two principal areas of artisanal workings. And one of those in particular, they've exposed quartz veining, very intense quartz veining, over a 30 to 40 meter wide zone, and for a distance of about 600 meters. Now, from our work, we believe we could even extend it further than that. And there's certainly good indications that the structures are carrying gold, not only just from the artisanal miners. So it's a very clear drill target for us, and our objective will be to take a drill rig down there, hopefully before the end of this quarter, just to do first pass reconnaissance drilling across it. But I think the scale of the quartz veining and the length of the structure could be very significant.
Yeah, okay, well, that's why it's an exciting new target, as you describe it. So let's go going forward now. What are the upcoming plans, and when do you see drilling results being released to the market, Jonathan?
Yeah, well, sure. At Sanankoro, all the drill assays or drill samples are in the laboratory. We will intend to get results out before the end of this month, the end of January. So that will be the first news release to the market with some hard facts. And thereafter, with drilling already in progress in the new year, news flow should start emerging on a regular basis thereafter.
Excellent stuff.
And then I just mentioned Tekela Dogo. I said before, drilling. We hope to get a drill rig down there before the end of this quarter for a first pass results to come through, you know, within 6 to 8 weeks after that.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Well, Jonathan, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing down there but are not yet following you or following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly. First of all, as I always like to say, a management team that's done it before, highly experienced in operating in West Africa. And the project we're working on at Sanankoro, very large footprint, huge endowment of gold in the area. I do believe it has the potential to exceed 1 million ounces. And we are active on the ground. We're drilling at the moment. And thirdly, we have this portfolio, large portfolio that surrounds the existing Yamfolila mine of Hummingbird within trucking distance. Any resources we can identify there, and our first work at Tekeludugu is starting to suggest that that has potential, then there's an opportunity for us to fast track towards cash flow.
Excellent stuff. Well, Jonathan, like I said, you've got a lot going on, so lots of news coming out. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
And I look forward to that. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malki, Oil and Gas Sector Authority. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Justin. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. So let's crack straight on with listeners, companies you're going to be talking about today. So who's the first one up, Malki?
I'm talking about Frontera Resources to start with. There are one or two companies this morning which I haven't mentioned much before, but some one or two exciting things. I always try and keep up with the things if I think they're looking exciting. And I went to visit one or two of these companies last year, and I'm going to see Frontera in about 3 weeks' time. Okay. Frontera are in Georgia, and they announced last week that they'd mobilized the drilling rig for a three-well campaign in Georgia. They've got this Tarabani field there, which is, like a number of things at the moment, is working over existing wells, and here they're going to be doing a three-well program, one with a one workover and two sidetracks. The interesting thing about this one is that it's made me think about it, and I got to meet the company last year, middle of last year, end of last year, and I was most excited. It does look interesting. Netherland Sewell, which is one of the industry's highly prominent and respected people who do competent persons reports, have given them 689 million barrels of oil in place, of which 103.5 should be recoverable. And if that's the case, then the shares should be on a different planet. Not necessarily the case, but interesting all the same. This one's got history as well, because some time ago it had a very decent retail following, but because it was based in the US, it kept on disappointing. You know, I tried to look at it once or twice, didn't get hold of the management. Zaza, he's the new CEO, has come on board and taken a real grip of it, and it does look very, very interesting and highly prospective. So Frontera Resources, one for the notebook.
Yeah, yeah, I've had Zaza on quite a bit. And I do like the chart there now, though, because, you know, it peaked at sort of towards 95 pence. It's come down to nearly half that, 52, but it's forming a nice base there, it is, at the moment. So the chart looks good.
It does look interesting, and, you know, the thing is that starting, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, we are going to have drilling activity. So, you know, you know, these things are never certain. But if by any reason any one of these three wells is any way successful, the upside, as I say, is substantial.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, what's next, Malki?
I mentioned Premier last week, and I'm going to mention Premier and Rockhopper again today. The reason for that is that middle of last week, they both put out operational updates. I think because Premier were putting an update about the general business, Rockhopper followed suit, took the opportunity. But in Premier's case, the upside is that things are going very well indeed. And at $70, which it nearly is at the moment, Premier are firing on all cylinders. Doesn't matter when you look at the exploration like in Mexico, and they've got, you know, the North Sea prospects, the Southern North Sea gas prospects, which was part of the E.ON acquisition, and of course Catcher, which is the sort of big thing at the moment. This is the North Sea field which they brought on stream at Christmas, started off at 10,000 barrels a day. I had a long chat with Tony Durrant last week. That's already producing. It's not only producing 20,000 a day, but actually could be producing quite a lot more. But until the end of January, they have flaring restrictions. The two wells are producing extremely well indeed. The whole prospect, I think, will be producing, you know, 60,000 barrels a day before long. That's 30,000 barrels a day net to Premier, which, as I said, is starting to pay down its debt and looking extremely strong position at the moment. So Premier operationally very well, and of course shares with Rockhopper the stake in Sea Lion, which is the Falkland Islands discovery, which is 1 billion barrels of oil. Went to the back burner really during the oil price crashing out, but I think, you know, I mean, they got the cost down so much that, in my view, this thing was profitable at low 40s, if not $40 a barrel. So it's got nearly $30 of upside, and if they don't develop it at $69 a barrel, then I don't know what's happening. And you know, they should do that. They should go ahead. They're doing lots of exciting moves with all the various participants in drilling and so on. So all those people are coming in various different ways. I understand they've got export finance not lined up, but of significant interest. All they need now is a bit of bank debt. You know, Premier know all about that. And the initial cost of $1.5 billion, which sounds a lot, but I think it's looking in a very strong position. They basically discovered the oil, and they've managed to get the numbers together for at a time when the costs are very low indeed. So I expect positive news. Premier and Rockhopper are both in my bucket list. Rockhopper, it's been a long haul, but this is what I've been waiting for. It ain't going anywhere right now, and staying there for the foreseeable. So good news for both those companies.
Yeah, what's next, Melky?
Right, two quick ones here. First of all, President, which I mentioned a number of times, and the chart there is extremely positive, and there's a very good reason for it. They are delivering the goods in spades. They, if you remember, they made an acquisition from Chevron. Chevron have been moving from the sort of smaller bits and pieces in Argentina to where the big boys are playing, which is the Vaca Muerta shale. So President made this acquisition from Chevron. So not only do they know that they were buying good quality bit of acreage with production, but there were several targets, intervals which you know, the company knew that Chevron hadn't even tested. So they announced last week the update from the third and fourth well in this program at Puesto Flores, and so they've completed them ahead of time, under budget. The payback for these wells is less than 3 months, Justin, if you can believe that. That is incredibly good. And Peter Levine, the chairman and president of President, has said that he's determined to increase cash flow and margins, which is what he's doing. So in February there'll be 1,700 barrels a day, which is way more than we would have expected last year. They're getting $64 a barrel for their oil at the moment, so that'll be higher in the next 2 or 3 weeks. They've already exceeded their expectations. They've got plans for this year. 2018 we'll see further workovers, and of course the first drilling of wells during the year. They raise money. They're now fully funded for that project the whole of 2018. In my view, the shares are outstandingly cheap.
Yeah, well, do you know what? They've been bumping along the bottom in the last year or so, but They've just risen off that, and they've tested a sort of almost a 12 pence sort of resistance level. And I think if they get above that, they'll start to, you know, motor kind of thing. You know?
Substantially. Yeah, very substantially.
Yeah, cool. All right. Anything else, Malky?
Yeah, just finally, I wanted to mention Zenith because people wondered. I got involved in this one at the end of last year because I had a look at it and thought it was of interest, having met Andrea Catania.
Catania. I said that a couple of times wrong, and I corrected him. And I said, how do I say it then? I said Catania.
So, Catania, yeah. And he's a very interesting guy. And so I went out to Azerbaijan, the Baku, and I thought it was most interesting. But although that's going to be the sort of head office, they are significantly looking at other things. And they announced on Friday that they're in an exclusive agreement for a potentially large acquisition in a Central Asian country with very substantial acreage, but with production and highly prospective exploration acreage. So this is not going to be, you know, moose pasture. This is going to be a decent amount of production, so they've got revenue and lots of upside. So he seems to be doing some quite smart deals. If this deal goes ahead, and we like the look of it when we get a bit more detail, I think the shares will motor. So I've liked Zenith for a few months, and I think they might be beginning to deliver the goods for the investors here.
Yeah, well, I've chatted to Andrea quite a few times, and he's a hard worker. He's everywhere, you know. He's constantly on it, so he is like a, you know, he beavers away there. So
he really is. And as I say, when I went on site, and you know, quite busy, so you know, taking a couple of days out to go on site there is important. But I really, really rated they've got a couple of guys out there who've got bags of experience, and you know, they've got a very good bunch of people out there. So you know, I think that one may well come good.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's Eddie Yen. Marvellous stuff, Malky. Thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, very much look forward to it. Take care, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Harvest Minerals, HMI. At 4, Vesaria, Neil, was just on the podcast, VRS. At 3, Greatland Gold, GGP. At 2, Carillion, CLLN. Really? I hope you're hitting the follow button before 7 a.m. Or in fact, I hope you weren't hitting it at all, but you obviously have been. But people are going for really, really sort of almost, you know, near death. Rebound, recovery play there, which, you know, it's against the odds, to be honest, as we know now. And hindsight's a wonderful thing. But we have discussed it several times on the podcast, and we've said, it's, you know, especially with Russ Mould a couple of times, saying it's a barge pole, stay clear stock, as we've seen. Most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. I did write the blog of them, actually, last night, and by all means, subscribe to the blog and get it to your email, was Symphony Environmental. And they seem to have a solution to the plastic problem we have at the moment in our oceans, and that is biodegradable plastic that it becomes environmentally friendly. It's assimilated. It's like a leaf, essentially. There's no harmful things given off, ingredients given off by the when it's degraded. So very impressive. And one of the bosses was on Sky News last week talking about Theresa May's green policy. So SYM, I think a company with very interesting technology worth following. Okay. Top five most liked RSs are as follows. At 5, Angus Energy, ANGS. Angus Energy of Brockham and Lindsay Update. At 4, Main Energy, MYN, Asphalt Ridge Update. At 3, SDX Energy, a spud of ONZ-7 well in Morocco. At 2, Harvest Minerals, HMI, substantial operational expansion. And number 1, most liked RNS, was from, of course, Vesarian. Or Vesarian, Neil says. I think he's pronouncing that wrong. But planned Chinese graphene manufacturing facility. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.